opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
One of the big ways that I see our failure to understand that white supremacy means, if you're a non-white person, you are always behind enemy lines. I think sometimes non-white people we get to where we want to just talk real loud, act like we have that army stashed away somewhere that's going to come out and protect us. You know, I'm black and I'm proud, you know, get away from me, not just with the, obviously we do it with the police a lot, but I see a tendency to do that just with white people in general sometimes, to try to act like we're tough and got that secret army. And I feel like that really is a sad illustration of our lack of understanding of white supremacy. Can you kind of share your view on that and why you don't, I've never really heard you, you know, speak really wild or get loud with a white person.
The most impotent creature in the form of a person on this planet is a black male. Period. No matter where on the planet they are, the most powerless person is a black male. The most powerless person on the planet in the form of a person is a black male person. But you see them walking down, picking up the sidewalk, acting like they can whip everybody. Sure, they can whip somebody who looks just like them, because that's permitted. Permitted by whom? The white supremacists. They don't care. Kill everybody in the neighborhood. So what? There's another black neighborhood gone. There's another one down the street, ready to go. What's the big deal? You better be careful about whose face you get into when you get carried away with what you can do to other black people. And what's pitiful about it is, most of us know that. Very few of us don't know that. We know whose face to get into. And we know just about how much backing we have. Black person in handcuffs, all kinds of tattoos, all kinds of long record for being able to whip everybody since ninth grade, standing there in handcuffs in an orange jumpsuit in his best hairdo, saying, "Yes, Your Honor." Why don't you use the kind of language toward Your Honor that you use with the people that you encounter right there in your neighborhood, the one that you say that you're master over, the one that you can terrorize? All the females flocking to you and halfway scared of you. Knock them around all over the place. Call them all kind of names. Why don't you call Your Honor that same name? Snatch him from behind the bench. No. See, we're great show people. Greatest show people on earth. 3 9mm, one in your sock, one in your waistband, one in your side pocket, ready to take on the entire world in a movie, in a homemade video, or passing a bus stop full of black people fixing to go to work, or you can terrorize them. Why don't you take on the champ, which usually is just one or two white supremacists who just come and say, now, I think you better behave because you're disturbing my peace. Now, if you don't think I can handle you, try me. And I haven't been on this planet forever, but I've never seen a situation on a large scale, or never heard of one on a large scale of any significance throughout the history of the black male, because that's who I'm talking about, who didn't chicken out in a moment of real crisis. So I don't want to hear it in this stalwart Black History Month about that all-powerful black male, because I've seen our record, particularly in the last, I'll say, just in this area of the world, 60 years. Now, we've had a few who did things the way that they ought to be done. They protested in the street. They carried signs. They talked about non-justice. Martin Luther King, people like that. Fannie Lou Hamer, as a black female, backing up black males who got out there and tried to do something that made sense, rather than just terrorize the neighbors. And that's doing what we're supposed to do from the weak position that we have. Only time we show all this bravery is when we are mistreating other victims of racism. For the most part, some exceptions, Nelson Mandela, exception, Martin Luther King, exception, Malcolm X, exception, a substantial list, but well spaced, all those black males in between, usually the ones who are doing hard time. If you look at what they are charged with, most of it is mistreating, whether they're guilty or not, but most of it is for mistreating other prisoners of war, the race war, people that look like themselves, can't stand themselves and want to kill everything that looks like them, and laugh about it, and call it an accomplishment. Now, I harp on this because this is one thing that should be real passé. As they say in the hip-hop culture, I think they call it whack. That's really whack. I think that's what they call it. Makes no sense at all. And has been embraced in every generation. Didn't just start. As far back as I can remember, black male carrying the Saturday night razor. I'm going to cut me somebody before the night's over. Oh, yeah. Who are you going to cut? Who are you going to cut, Jimmy? Who are you going to cut, Mac? Well, I'm going over to the dance hall. Who's in the dance hall, Mac? I'm going to cut me somebody who breaks bad over at the dance hall. Who is it that's going to break bad in the dance hall, Mac? Well, somebody that looks like me. Somebody I probably went to school with before I dropped out, and they dropped out. So we meet up 18 years later, and we slash each other to death in the alley. And that's supposed to be a big deal and the purpose for being on the planet. Now, there are millions of black people who think just like that. And they are not all just in this area of the world. They are south of here in places like Brazil. They look forward to that kind of foolishness. It's an old black tradition while we're talking about black history. That's a huge part of black culture. It needs to stop, and it needs to stop as of tonight. We need to do some thinking and just say enough of that. Been there, done that. forget it. No more gang tattoos. I mean, you know, who are we fooling? Who can we really whip? A very limited number of people. And certainly nobody who is smarter and more powerful than we are, particularly somebody who is really an army. A system of white supremacy. You know anything about taking that on? No, nothing, zero. Better start tap dancing.
Oh, wow. Wow. Again, I guess, a privilege, Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. I wanted to highlight something that you said there. You said the most impotent figure in the system of white supremacy is the black male. And actually, this was back of the bus. He said that you did not say non-white males. You made a distinction and said specifically black males. You don't feel like just non-white males in general are in...
Non-white males in general, and the darker they are, the ones who carry the label of black. Sometimes they're not dark ones. I mean, some of them are very light. Some of them look like they're white. But they carry the label of what we call black-black, if you just want to double whammy it. Anytime you get that category, if you're talking about a black male, you're talking about somebody who, big bulging muscles, lots of tattoos, heavy voice. I mean, shake the walls with the way that they talk. You would think that they would know everything with the way that we talk and swagger. And like I gave the illustration before, walk down the sidewalk, taking up the whole sidewalk, want everybody to move out. Until they meet somebody maybe about 100 pounds lighter than them, much smaller than them, but the person is white. Now all of a sudden you know how to act. That's why I say it's an act. Because you pick your place. You wait till you get somewhere close to the hood, and then all of a sudden you become powerful. Why aren't you powerful everywhere you go? Some black males never even dare step outside of what they call their turf. And when they do, when they're forced to, for some reason, all of a sudden they become very sane, very cautious about how they go about doing things. It's miraculous. They become a whole nother person. Which means that the black male in the Northwestern Hemisphere in particular, the ones that I observe mostly, and the one of which I am one of, and been among most of my days, we know how to conduct ourselves under certain circumstances. Magically. We may not know exactly what to say, so we keep our mouths shut. We know when to do that and what environment to do it in. Which means that we are excellent actors. So we act like men when we're really whimpering boys. Because when we go up against somebody who's a real man, we chicken out. And we do it almost consistently every time, and we do it every day. Strong black male doesn't exist.
All right. Welcome to the Code Breakers. This is Paradox. Today is July the 18th, 2017. I got T, and I also have DC here. And we're going to be having, we're going to be discussing a few things. The title of the program today is going to be, What Are You Willing to Give Up for Justice? The quick description is going to be Black Sacrifice, To Maintain America, Power Through Race and Class, Justice or Exploitation, Western Universities Teaching Supremacy, Black Entertainers' Impact on Common Life, China, Russia, and the Asian Effect, The Indigenous Revolt, The Possibilities. So we may touch on a couple of these things. We will see as we go through some of this tonight. Fellas, are you there?
Hello?
Can I be heard?
Yeah, you can be heard.
Can I be heard? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That sounds kind of weird, but...
Can you? Who sounds off, me or you or what?
Oh, it's me. I sound better now. Okay.
Yeah, you
I'm
good.
Not too loud. Okay. All right, cool.
What's going on, fellas? I ain't heard from y'all in a couple of weeks, at least live on the internet.
I was about to say, like, who are you fooling? Yeah, so, I mean, that's a good topic. I think that, at all, but, Mr. Fuller normally does is give very, very strong commentary on manhood, blackness, and all that, and I know that it's very difficult for victims of white supremacy to hear his commentary. I think that a lot of times the way he see it, is totally different than just, a lot of different people, and maybe we hope that his message is not being lost upon people. But just accept the message, and just, I guess, just accept it as you can, and just whatever you can take from it. If not, then
No, I think it speaks for itself, so there's no apologies for him. He said what he said, and we keep it moving. But so what
I
do you
think
it's
go ahead, fellas. No, I'm good.
Well, there's OJ's parole hearing is coming up, and I believe it's going to be they got to make entertainment out of it, and it's going to be live casted. I think it's in the next few days or something.
I don't know. They make sure they keep pumping that through. I said I was telling someone today that they probably made about $300-400 million off this man.
Yeah.
At least, if not
more.
So,
can he write for us to air those trials?
Nah, man. I was thinking, if it wasn't for him, I don't think cable news and trials on TV would even exist. So, really, it's probably billions of dollars. He generated so much attention going back, back to the 90s. It's crazy when you think about how when was it? Was it like 92 or something? 93? When was it? It's fat. 20 years ago.
Yeah, so it's been a while, man. It's been a while.
95, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, DC, yeah. I want DC to go ahead and get that thought out that he kind of had, though. Did you still?
No. Now, go ahead. Which one are you talking about? Let's do it.
No, I mean, Mr. Fuller's. We'll get a little bit more into the discussion in a second. But just from just your thought, I think you was going down the road of black male, black manhood, or whatever. Kind of going down that road as far as trying to just to process what he was saying, or trying to process what he was saying.
Yeah, I mean, he comes from the position that we, the ones that fall into the classification of blackness, are not men. And you know, he has a whole viewpoint and thought pattern on that. And I think that a lot of times when that is said, you know, a lot of people may take it, you know, in a certain way, which, you know, I understand totally, because I know how I was when I first heard it. You know, it took me a while to be able to decipher his point of view, and a lot of that has to do with just, you know, I called him one time to get a particular viewpoint on it, and also just listening to him on a regular basis to kind of get people, you know, challenging him on that very notion to get a very clear view about what his positioning is. When you talk about manhood, I think that it's more of a abstract point that he's trying to make, you know, about manhood, that is, that the definition is fluid depending on who you are talking to. So he's saying, if you display manhood in this particular setting, then why you're not doing it in all settings? You know, I guess there will be people that do it, but then, you know, I guess they have to suffer the consequences as it is, as it may. But, you know, I think he goes over the examples of his point, you know, how somebody can be in the neighborhood, in the hood or whatever, and, you know, walking around big and bad, bold or whatever, mistreating other victims of racism, white supremacy. Then when the man come around, then, you know, they dip out, you know. So sometimes that does happen.
Yeah, I think it's very tricky, because you can fall into a trap of individualism, you know. So I think that's where it gets kind of, it's tricky, man. That's all I can say. It's hard to process. You know, all of it, you know, just because when I played it for a reason, obviously, but when you are speaking that direct and that plain, you know, it's gonna sound, I put it this way, it's in a, if you're already beat down, supposedly, I don't even really, you know what's so funny? I really don't even know, just because what I'm about to say really doesn't necessarily make sense, you know. But in a sense, you know, you feel like I would argue and say you're already beat down. So if you're already beat down, you know, why add to it? Or I was thinking maybe, you know, it's not like people, and it's not like civilians have, you know, necessarily can go and, you know, form a military. I guess they could, sort of, a militia or something, but just playing with words, I guess. But can't necessarily, like, it's a weird conversation in a sense from a power standpoint, I think. So if you're already in a society and you're a civilian and your job is pretty much to go to work or hang out and things are already in place, then you say that it's unusual in a sense that I can't necessarily make a phone call or go somewhere else and go and hire, you know, an army or whatever to deal with a particular situation. I mean, I was thinking, like, just thinking different things about how does it sound, you know, to people when you're hearing it. Not even to people, just to myself, in the sense that, you know, are you trying to break me down? Am I already broken down? You know? So it's just a weird, it creates a lot of questions, in a sense. You know what I'm saying? So just because someone is acting a certain way and putting on bravado or putting on a certain front, you know, if they're all victims, they're all victims. If they're all oppressed, they're all oppressed. So in one sense, what are you really saying?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Maybe not.
Yeah.
No, it makes sense.
I think part of the problem is that being in an oppressive system such as this, and especially being forced into the classification of black,
you have, you look for outlets to for anger, or I guess it'd be a form of anger management. So really the only outlet that's allowed in the system for people classified as black is going to others classified just as they are black as well. I think at the essence, at the root, that's what he's talking about. I mean, because he, you know, W. Fuller, he alludes to the fact that we are in this oppressive system, and so he's just saying that that is the outlet for the anger, and especially when you don't have a deeper understanding of how the system works, and you're just looking at symptoms. You know, I can't find employment. I've been locked up. I'm pregnant at a young age. People on strung on drugs. Just a slew, you know, child abuse. Just a bevy of issues that have been piled upon us, and without having a deeper understanding of, and this goes to mental illness, which we touched on as well. I'll let you get in on that thought. But the fact that we have issues that not understanding the system as a whole and why we may be in the position that we're in, people are going to look for outlets for that frustration. And unfortunately, it is amongst ourselves, because we know that if it's on people classified as white, it'll be even more detrimental to us as far as what may happen to us in terms of law enforcement or what have you, or the judicial system. So I think that's what he's kind of alluding to there.
Yeah, I don't know what he's talking about, but I will say that it does, because I can't speak for that person, but it definitely does sound like he is frustrated. You know, 80 something years old, the things that he's seen from the 1930s until now, and you got people talking crazy and really can't move an anthill. It sounds like it's more frustration, but you still have to, I would argue and say, you still have to pamper people a little bit. You know, you're talking about people who, including myself, I'll speak for myself now, I'll stop saying the word people and they, who might be sensitive, might be emotional. And so when I hear something like that from some old head talking crazy, you know, I'm going to definitely feel a certain type of way. Because it's like anyone would say, it's always a way that you should talk to people. Clearly, he's not talking to anybody. He's just expressing a particular emotion that he has. And so it's interesting. It's interesting, to say the least, because he can't do nothing and he ain't solved the problem, and I haven't either. So definitely, you know, provoke somewhat of a discussion, I would assume. I got more of those, by the way, because he really, you know, it's so funny, because he really goes in on some other stuff, but I'll say that for later. But like you said, DC, it is something that you do have to be able to, it's interesting, I put it that way. I'll put it this way. I'm not old, so I think I have more of a tolerance. You know, I have more of a tolerance for him making the statements. And anyway, so it's just a funny thing on so many levels, though.
You know, analogies are always up for
no analogies
being suspect, but I will use this one. It would remind me of a offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator looking at a game and seeing everybody move around in pieces and motion. That's the reason why they're in the press box. And normally, the position coaches, which are, I would say, the players, the people that are participating on everyday level, they don't really get the chance to kind of like view it from the press box, or even view it from, you know, top side. Even when you get up further up, you know, when things get to looking a little bit differently, you have a different purview about the situation, then it gets less attached to you emotionally, and you just see the devastation of it all, the damage, pretty much. And you just give a analysis from your point of view about what you are just seeing, because you know, some of the stuff that he said is not, it's not like it's not true, it's just his interpretation of what he has experienced with his years of living and, you know, studying this problem of racism, white supremacy.
It's a little tough, though.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't feel direct. Good at all.
What I mean is that I think, you know, when I hear it, it does bring me down. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't necessarily make me want to. It doesn't make me necessarily want to go and study or learn something. Obviously, it's my opinion about it, but it's funny because it's more like of a. It reminds me. You know, I don't know if y'all have any crazy uncles or mean uncles or uncles that are very, very straightforward, but it's their own thoughts. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's just their own thoughts. So he ain't no philosopher. He didn't go to these Yales where it you know, if someone said they went to Yale or Texas A&M, then what they say must be okay, right? So he didn't go to none like that. He's just thinking about things, you know, average person. No one knows who he is, not trying to be nothing, not trying to know nothing, not trying to come up with phrases like Pan-Africanism. Like, he's none of that stuff, right? Just a relative of yours. And, like, he's telling you, like, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? Like, that type of thing. Like, you ain't gonna do nothing. So it's funny. When I hear it, it's funny in that way. But like in a more serious way, I think, you know, I would tell people to call into his show just to ask him, because he will give you an answer. But you know, it's trying to transfer that energy that he's putting out into something else. I'm not sure what that does. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not totally clear about what that does for somebody because of how it sounds. Because to say what he said, I don't know what you need to know to make that make sense. It's what I'm trying to tell you. Like, how much information do you need to understand for what he said makes sense and not take it personal, or not feel like that it's an attack or a threat against whatever your organization is trying to do. But using the information, using the energy, or his thought to try to crack open another idea in your mind, like to try to get you to look at it in another way, or does the paranoid gene kick in, and you're like, man, he might be a Fed or something? Like, what is he talking about? But anyway, just a lot of different thoughts. You know, a lot of different thoughts. You really never know how anybody really feels about people. So it's always, and maybe feelings don't even matter at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying? It's always weird because the way we talk about levels. Well, I talk about levels a lot. So it's always funny that what I just said may be important on the field level, like you were just saying, but in the press box, to use your analogy, which I hate using, by the way, but I'm gonna go with it. In the press box, you're not looking at emotions. You know what I'm saying? You print out some film. You look at this. You know what I'm saying?
All right, the sky don't lie, man.
I can't worry about what y'all said. Doing down there. This is what you need to do. So it's a. I would say in the position that people that I'm in, I couldn't say if it's helpful or not. I don't know. I had to think about it more. I mean, I've been hearing it for years, obviously, but every time I think about it, I just kind of like, you know, is it really pushing me, you know, to new thought? Is it affecting me any kind of way? Is it making me less effective? And then, of course, I started asking myself, what does that even mean, obviously? But anyway, not to beat that horse too much. Did y'all have any more thoughts?
With the brother, put it off, just give a background on it. There's a guy, I don't know if he's still active, but it was a guy named Phoenix Jones, that was an alias out in Seattle, who donned a superhero's outfit and would go out four or five times a night and break up fights, and not classified as black, break up fights and, you know, help people who were injured, I guess, over intoxicated or whatever the case may be.
Was that real? I didn't mean to interrupt. Is that actually real? Yes. Was he really doing? Wow. I thought that was actually, just. I thought that was a whole act. I thought that was an act. I did
yeah,
not.
Phoenix
did
Jones, not he real. Actually. Wow. He actually got. I mean, some videos of him actually on YouTube knocking folks out in the streets. Because Washington State is a mutual combat state. In other words, if two people agree to fight each other, it's legal as long as it's agreed upon. I think, I don't know if that's in any other state, but he uses that, I guess he uses that somehow to his advantage. But he got brought up on charges, I think, a couple of years ago for pepper spraying some folks. The police claimed that he pepper sprayed some white folks ostensibly that were dancing and weren't causing any harm, but the charges got dropped. But I just want to throw that out there to you guys, because I mean, this guy is suited up. He almost has a costume. He looks like Wolverine, like a gold and black costume.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes me wonder how that type of thing is. Is it because he has this fictional, I guess, kind of vibe to him, like the superhero thing? Because he has a group that he runs with, and they all wear costumes, I guess. But the police in Seattle say they don't condone it or agree with it, but I guess they grant him a certain amount of leeway. And you know, Seattle is, I don't know what's the demographic there. It's probably mostly white. So he's probably, probably the people, the patrons and club goers, probably who he's mostly interacting with on a nightly basis. I'll just throw that out to you guys. But, it does look unreal, right?
Yeah, it didn't look real to me. So I thought it was just him videotaping himself, kind of trying to sell himself to Hollywood to become a stuntman, because that's what it looked like. But wow, that was actually real. It's very interesting. Like, I think people should check it out.
Yeah,
that's definitely something to check out. Wow, it's very interesting. Because I heard him even talking about, you know, how he grew up in, you know, inner city neighborhood, and he just wanted to do something, you know, which is understandable. Like I said, like a lot of things, people want to do things, you know, to do movements. And not to sit still and just remain, you know, stagnant. I mean, we are. It seems like there is something that is very communal about human beings. You know, like people that group together and do things together to get a task done. So it just seems like the ones that have mastered this communal thing has been able to monopolize it and focus it and get things done by dominating other people that they deemed that were different than them. So, very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and not to disparage the brother, and I don't want to harp on it too much, but I don't believe he can get away with that type of thing in the so-called hood. You know, like, yeah, I don't think he would see a so-called black or white guy walking around in the hood with a superhero costume on. Unless, maybe if it's Halloween, maybe. But I'm just kind of juxtaposing that. You know, I don't think he would see that. So, interesting.
Well, there ain't that many black people in Seattle, so, you know. Whatever that means, doesn't mean that they don't have any hoods. I'm pretty sure they got poor neighborhoods out there, but yeah, I get exactly what you're saying, though. Makes sense.
So what are you guys thinking on some of the topics that we got?
Well, which one would you want to delve into? I mean, it's pretty heavy.
I threw some stuff out of just to kind of get you guys as
You got Black Sacrifice, To Maintain America, Power Through Race and Class, Justice or Exploitation. What do you guys want to delve into? I'm pretty sure we probably won't be able to get into all of it, but
no, probably not, definitely not. You can go for the clickbait and do Black Entertainers.
Nah, we'll save that for later. I mean, that's not, you know, that tends to take up a lot of mental power because it has such a strong pull because of how they have allowed. And then I guess we could start with this. So let's delve into the whole. I guess what I was saying, that there is a, that what has been created, if you, this is just my viewpoint, and what has been created as far as like the whole thought pattern of whiteness, creating a paradigm that everybody has to live in, that forces your solutions to be counterproductive to anybody else that may be in that same system. So let me give you an example. So if I'm somebody that is into politics and I'm saying, well, we want things in our particular neighborhood and this is how we need it because we need it the most, and you know, you feel this way, and then the person that's across the way is saying, well, we need to get our particular, you know, roads fixed and things of this nature, and we need to have things pulled in this particular direction. There seems to be a grievance that is broken down by racial guidelines, because the country is still, even though they call it integration, they have still separated groups of people, or large groups of people, and put them in certain silos or neighborhoods where, or communities where there are majority this, and then this particular group is majority that, and then they divvy out the resources accordingly, and then that affects schools, and that affects, you know, resources, stores, things of that nature, which causes a pathology to develop after a while. And then when the pathology develops, then you have other victims that may be in that same neighborhood or outside of that neighborhood, or even just know about people or have family members in that neighborhood, that start to judge those people. So it starts to be like, well, when did your personal responsibility take over? When are you going to learn to deal with your situation? You see what I'm saying? Like, so forget about Jim Crow, forget about what slavery has done, the more physical part of slavery, and then forget about the prison industrial complex, which is also a form of slavery. Forget about all the laws that was passed during segregation and integration, basically forcing people into neighborhoods and then forcing people to deal with certain conditions by law. Like, these were laws that were passed. Like, you couldn't sell certain property to black people. You had to tax black people in certain communities higher than they would be if they was in a white community. I mean, they had all kinds of things that they did to shatter the mentality of people. And then how do you couple that with raising children and trying to give them the proper perspective on how to, you know, continue in a peaceful, so-called peaceful environment, on doing things the so-called right way, that it creates this whole, like, I don't know what else to call it, but neurosis, that people are mentally ill. We grew up in a community where people are not being able to be their truest self because they're not able to manifest their destiny fully. There is something that's in the way. But then you have other people say, well, no, there ain't nothing in your way. You're just basically you're just basically being selfless, you're being lazy. So people don't even know how to decipher on what they can and cannot do. That's how bad it's gotten. So even if there is something that you can do, there may be some people that just be like, nah, you know what, I'm good with that. I'm not even trying because I don't want to be disappointed. And then you have people that do try, and then they get some successes, and then they get some failures, but then they be mad at the other people that are not trying because they feel like those people are holding them back, because black people as a whole are collective. You see what I'm saying? Like this whole dichotomy, this push and pull between our group that's forced together. And then don't even get me going with other identities within our group, the LGBT communities, the women's movement, the immigrants, the black immigrants, where you got some black people that are native born to this particular country that get mad at Africans that come over here to benefit from racism and white supremacy. Like, we really can do something about it. Like, that would just be incredible to me to just see black victims walk on Capitol Hill and say, no more African immigrants in this country. They're not black like me. Like, that can literally happen. Just think about the damage, you know, the mental damage that we have actually experienced as a forced group together, because we don't share a lot of commonalities even within this country. And then to be forced to share the classification with people that wasn't raised here, that don't share the slave narrative, it just keeps this constant conflict. And then you got people that are here, they gather all these different identities. You know, I'm LGBT, I'm a black woman first, or I'm a black man, or I'm a black male, I believe in MGTOW, you know, this you know, black men going their own way. It's a lot, man. And I'm like, you know, at the end of the day, is it viable to even think about this problem in the way that we think about it anymore? Like, even if you're just thinking about just black people, is it even viable to think about it anymore? Because it seems to be that people have accepted the system to a certain degree, whether they are reluctantly going along with it or whether they're just all in with it. But there is an acceptance of how things are done now, that the viewpoint of trying to go the justice route is not doable. And the way you can tell is that people are trying to reform this type of system. So they rather reform the injustice of this system instead of just to replace it with a better system. And we don't even have to call it justice, but just to replace it with something better, to start over new, because the way this was built on mistreatment of a group of people in particular, and the genocide of another group of people in particular. So that's the thing that never gets past this particular country. It's the reason why when you build this whole system on race, the reason why race can never be forgotten. The reason why it's always coming up in movies, coming up in news, coming up in police, you know, interactions, is because the way they have formulated race as an actual construct, as something that's real, and people are manifesting it out, it just keeps bleeding out, and then nobody has real cut solutions to this system, and that we just all just play along, and we stuck into this, like this hamster wheel, it seems like. Because it's like, you know, of course, when you look at the numbers, black people are, you know, being mistreated the most. Let's just put it that way. And that the numbers clearly bear that out. And that this was done on purpose. It wasn't something that was happenstance. Oh, it was because you didn't have education. Oh, no, this was something that you was personally attacked. Not personally, but, you know, you were systematically attacked. And that now you have all these different ideologies that have developed because people have been able to try to survive, because that's what we've been left with. So it's almost like I can't even blame victims of racism that have a completely different view than I do, because that's their reaction to the system. And me being mad at them because of their reaction to the system doesn't do any anything to alleviate or change the way that we're viewed in the system. It doesn't change the fact that I'm still classified as black like that person is. It doesn't change it. So I could be mad at them. I could say you're a coon. I could say you're this. I could do all the name calling. I could say you're not really a black person. But at the end of the day, we're still forced into the same classification. And I think that the beginning point of trying to really, really solve this problem is to go beyond hope at this point. To go beyond beyond the actual ideals of reforming this. Because if you go through all the detail, you will start to see that this system is based off mistreatment. So if you just took over, this is black people that I'm speaking about in this very clear instance. If black people just took over, then you would still have to bomb Indonesia. You would still have to go through the seas and make sure that nobody is in your certain sphere. If they do cross, then you bomb the hell out of them. You do disease testing just in case somebody, you know, overseas start to try to buck at you. You can put out a disease that can kill a whole population off. Like, these are things that are done to maintain the power structure. And I have always stated, why do you want to do that? Like, there got to be a different way. Well, there ain't no different way. Then what is all this talk for? What are we talking about? Either we're trying to end the system of racism, white supremacy, or we're not trying to end the system of racism, white supremacy. That's what I'm on. I don't believe in God, though. See, that's where I come with that. You see what I'm saying? You believe that that Moses freed the Hebrews from Ramses. You know, there wasn't no reforming Egypt at that time. They had to go somewhere else. Am I correct, fellas? Y'all guys know your Bible. I know y'all ex-Christians are still Christians, still digging into your Bible every once in a while. Moses had to leave, right? He had to get those people out of there. Couldn't reform the system as it was, right? Is that not accurate, or am I wrong on that? That they had to go to a whole new land and set up shop differently? Is that what happened? Can I be heard?
He did bring a new law.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. New laws in place, new ways of doing things. Old way or whatever. I'm saying that clearly, you know, justice, trying to bring justice, something outside of yourself, something to govern your activities outside of oneself, outside of one's urges to try to rule and dominate other groups of people. Or at least that's what it comes out to be. But of course, we know that, you know, that's all allegory. But the point is that when there's two conflicting sides and there's a group that's been so mistreated, right? Like the Hebrews at that point, the slaves, the black people. There was so much mistreatment at that point that there was no way that they could reconcile in the same space. And to me, that's what we're dealing with. Like, there's no way to make it up. And even if it was, white people are not going to give it to you. Like, why would they do that? And when I say white people, I mean even the ones that don't make the decisions to the ones that do make the decisions. That's not logical to do. You know, oh, you have talked so much, or you have convinced me so much, or you have slept with me so much that, hey, you know what? Hey, it's good. We need to go ahead and do right by you black folks. Without lifting up a weapon to fight these people? Because the history shows me that these people love to fight. They love to kill. Am I making sense, or am I kind of ranting, or is it not connecting?
You making sense to me.
So what do you guys think about that, though? About, because when the title to me says it all. What are we willing to give up for justice? Because justice is hard, man. That is not easy. No matter what your definition of it is, it's hard. If this country can't live to its constitution, literally cannot live to its constitution, and they call that justice, you can imagine how hard it's going to be to come out of that when you're the oppressed group, when you have been basically mentally damaged by this other group. I mean, it's devastating, man, because when you look at the lay of the land and you look at how people react to each other, we have a very predatorial relationship with each other. And then when we get when we get around white people, that predatory type of atmosphere, I don't see it manifest. You may try it, but it doesn't manifest the same way that it does with our own people, man. And when I say our own people, I mean people that's forced into the classification of black. There ain't no choice in it. I'm done. Did you guys have any comments on that, or you want to get into the break, or, you know, come back?
Now we can do a break if you want.
Go ahead.
What were you saying, T?
I was saying that we had a few minutes before break.
I know I said a lot, so go ahead and chew up on some of that.
You sound crazy, you know that, right?
I know, man. I'm trying not to. Man, I wish I just took that blue pill, man. I knew I should have took that, man. Right when I just got into this whole deal, I said, you know what? This rabbit hole goes too deep, man. If you're trying to solve the problem. If you're trying to monopolize and you're trying to mistreat, then, you know, you do what you do.
Yeah, but isn't there too much? I can't say too much. I mean, that's a good word. But isn't there enough information out there to... for those who are trying to exploit, to either one, know better, or two, would you say they just don't know? Like, I mean, literally, in this day and age, you have to be in some podunk town or under some rock somewhere to not have access to some of these things. In other words, if you want to be a great exploiter, you gotta know some of the truth, right?
Absolutely. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
So that's my thing, is that you know, how much, and maybe this is not the right word to use for it, but how much of that is human nature? I mean, humans are some, whatever we want to use that, however you want to use that word, some messed up individuals on many different levels. And you can say that's part of the system, or that's just, you know, they're born with two different sides. I don't know, but the fact of the matter is, you got to know some truth to mislead and exploit people.
But wouldn't that tell you everything that you need to know on how devastating this system is, if you have a group of people that's been able to monopolize the fact that they know that human beings are collective, that we move like this, and that your mentality is grouped together, like that is like a herd type of mentality for the most part, that's what that is. And that you force this group to be together, even though they're not really together, You can see it. You can just see people just being mad. You stay steadily angry, but you don't know. You don't know why that you're just feeling this way, and that they give you definitions for who you are, you know. And it just seemed to have this more just devastating effect on groups of people that are trying to self-define themselves even within this system. So it becomes very, very, very difficult to try to say, well, you know, this is the solution. No, no, no. Your solution is nonsense. No, this is the solution. No, 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 no. That ain't the solution. This is the solution. So you got about 500 people. I would say 500 people that got good ideas, but you need cooperation, right? You need help doing things, because we are a group of people that collectively you have to have a group that falls in line and, you know, feels what you have to say. Like, for instance, if your message fall on deaf ears and people don't agree with what you're saying, then people tune you out, then nobody hears. It's like hearing a tree in the forest that nobody's around. Doesn't mean that tree didn't fall, just nobody heard it. you see what I'm saying? It's just, you know, it's sort of to the analysis of that, the people that can reach the most people have the most effect, whether they're wrong or incorrect or whether their message is doing the most harm. But collectively, we feed into that. They have been able to find a way to do algorithms through YouTube. So they have known how to actually gather people throughout your interest to whatever videos you watch on YouTube, and they filter you to your group. So every video you get, every suggestion you get is basically within the purview of what you have actually watched. And the more you watch those, the more they're going to give you those videos. And I'm pretty sure people fall in and out of their group, but everybody still falls in. So anyway, we're going to go to break, and we'll come back with finish up some of the more of the topics on the other side next hour. You get a Code Breakers.
For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All right, this is the Code Breakers. We are back for the second hour. This is Paradox. I also got T and DC on the line. You can always reach us if you have a comment at 1-866-510-9025. Press ** if you want to make a comment. We'll just kind of pause and let you go ahead and start speaking if we're already speaking. You can also catch us live on the first and third Tuesdays of the month at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. I can never say that right. As well, please visit blacktalkradionetwork.com. Definitely check out BTR Community, as well as our old podcast and other hosts and shows as well, with a wide variety of topics you can definitely find on the website as well. All right, so the question, fellas, is did either one of you answer the questions, or what are you willing to give up for justice? Or was you speaking more, for all people in a sense?
No, I can't speak for all people, me personally, but the that question is so hard hitting as far as like what you're willing to give up for justice. I think that that what it does is just kind of give you a way of just kind of going through your thoughts to kind of test your thoughts and your ideals of, is it really okay to really continue to act like this system that we're living in right now is just, you know, I'm okay with the way things are. Like, is there something really, really wrong? And am I willing to give up a more comfortable position in the system to begin the process of eliminating, or even thinking about eliminating, this system, even though a lot of people don't really believe that that's a reality? But do I give my energy to doing that, or do I give my energy to be all in into the system, blame other victims of racism, white supremacy, name call, put in more negative energy, and to continue the cycle that we've been on for the longest? So I would say, you know, do I give up my comfort, my mental comfort within the system? That's the only way that I can give it. Do I give up my comfort? You know, giving up your comfort as far as mentally trying to think about it, because thinking about it is hard. It's difficult because there's so many challenges when you really look at this system for what it is. It's global, it's widespread, it's massive, it has a hold on everybody mentally, including me, myself, and am I willing to fight that long haul mentally, which would, I would imagine, give you, you know, depressed days, sort of like Mr. Fuller sounded like he was pretty much frustrated by, you know, some of the things that he was seeing. And that's what I'm saying. Like, it's like everybody has a different reaction to the system. So that's my answer. I don't know if I really answered it properly, but go ahead, T.
You know, it's interesting that until I heard DC's explanation, I thought that question was predatory. Because it's almost like, to me, saying it's like a carrot on a stick. Like, if you want justice, then you have to be willing to give up something to get it. Instead of it being a thing of you should be born into a system of justice, not a bartering type system. But what DC was saying about the fact that giving up mental comfort, in other words, the different, and this may get into the Western University teaching white supremacy conversation, but willing to, you know, your cup overflow with ignorance. So being willing to re-examine a lot of the indoctrination that we've been fed and taught for years. Chief among them being the follow the leader archetype, which to me, I think, comes out of the religious dogma. You know, whether you look into whatever, I'm not going to name particular deities or personages, but you get the idea. You know, look into these certain people or spirits for guidance. So I think that is what creates the groupthink to a degree, instead of people making up their own minds about things. Nothing wrong with obviously listening to others and, you know, gaining insight based upon their experiences, but constantly following a group way of thinking, it can be detrimental when you're dealing with people who run this type of system. They've obviously studied certain behaviors that are typical amongst so-called humans, and they've exploited them. But that's what came to mind when, once DC kind of started talking about giving them certain comforts, especially as it relates to the mental traps that we have that have been placed in our mind to contain us within certain patterns of thinking, and it's reinforced by media, entertainment. I mean, a number of things. So yeah, that was, so I appreciated that.
Huh, okay. So I think we was thinking, you know, when I say justice or exploitation, you know, it feels like, or maybe not feels like, I guess it is, in a sense, you know, if you're taking a position of justice, how do you, this is probably, I guess, for either one of you guys, but if you're taking a position for justice, how is there a way to kind of deal with trying to, I guess, minimize the exploitation part of your life? Or you're exploiting yourself, or you being exploited. Does that question make sense?
Break that down a little bit.
Just that, you know, if you're fighting for justice, or if you're trying to move yourself into that space, you know, maybe trying to change things in different ways, or trying to change one's mind, or just trying to get a better understanding of what this is and what's going on, versus being consumed through exploitation. Like, you know, maybe, you know, job employment, being caught up in, you know, buying lots of goods and services, you know, putting on fronts, you know, trying to be something that you're really not, you know, bravado, whatever, you know, nice cars, or not even that, but just, you know, I look at the environment from a, you know, just from a day-to-day perspective of, I don't want to say, you know, I'm pimping myself in a sense, but, you know, like, you know that you're being taken advantage of, you know, exploitation is happening, either you may be mistreating a female, a family member, you might be, the way you're being used at your job, or at your, you know, if you have a business, if you're using people in your business, just being consumed, I think, by the system, or this system, in a sense that it seems like the way this place is set up, it feeds on exploitation. Like, you have to be, like, you know how, if you try to, like, stand up for something, like, if you go to your job now and you take a hard position, they'll basically just get rid of you. And for example, this is going to be a bad example, by the way, but on the black entertainment thing, I want to mention to tie it into exploitation, is you take a person like Colin Kaepernick, right? Which I don't want to harp on too much, but, you know, somebody came to me and said, you know, did you hear what, I won't even say the player's name, but did you hear what a particular ex-player said about Colin? And I was like, no. So they told me what they said, and then this is a black male, then they said they agreed with it.
I had to say the name of the victim, man. You have to, for context, man. So it's okay, you already dropped Colin Kaepernick. I think people know who you're talking about, but just in case, you know.
Right, so, Mr. Michael Vick. So I guess a reporter stuck a microphone in his face. I don't know the details. Honestly, I don't care. I've been trying to do a better job at staying off of social media. If I'm, you know, trying to stay away from YouTube and a lot of things, to be honest. Which, even though, if I'm on those things, it's for a very particular reason. Put it that way. It's not something I'm going to be perusing and just kind of, like, you know, got to have the phone in my face or have a computer in my face to look at stuff, is my point. So typically when I go, I'm trying to get into a mode where I'm going for a purpose. I'm looking for something very specific. I'm not just watching trash, you know. But anyway, so when they made the comment, and again, you know, what you notice about people, if you take a position that tends to be counter to whatever the television is telling somebody, or whatever a book is telling somebody, or whatever a news article is telling somebody. It doesn't really matter where it's coming from. It's really, to me, not their thought. It's not an original thought, and it's not their thought. It's like this continuous stream of trash. And so they was telling me about it, and I said, well, you know, because I think in one way it's maybe not that big of a deal. You know, in one way, I'm probably making it too deep, and when people interact with me, I probably take things too far. But on, you know, I say that because that's how people take it. But then on the flip side, it's like it's my duty to make it deep, in the sense that you're gonna come and waste 30, you know, 2 or 3 minutes of my life, my time, telling me about trash. And then I'm supposed to play along with the conversation, you know, and sit there and debate about nonsense. And so I was like, what you're saying, you know, I totally rejected the whole situation, obviously. You know, I don't know none of these people. These people are on television, you know. I mean, it doesn't even really matter at the end of the day, on some level. But then on another level, it really does show how things continue. And talking about someone's presentation, if you are a black person, and you know, for all I know, as a black, you know, whoever you are, and whoever's in your ear, whoever's pulling on you, I don't know what they're telling you or what they're doing to you to get you to say what you're saying. So I don't even know if it's coming from a genuine place, and I know it's not because of the person that I'm talking about. If you look at Kaepernick's upbringing, where he comes from, et cetera, clearly he knows what to do to get whatever he wants in this environment, as much as he can take himself based off of what's allowed. And so to have somebody else who is in his same group just talking sideways and strange, you know, about what he should do and what he should do with his hair and all this, just stupid. It's almost unbelievable, to be honest, which in so many ways. But the person says, yeah, I agree with Vic. And I just had to sit there and really, we had to really spend like 30 minutes kind of breaking down, like, that's you. And again, this is my opinion. I don't think you're seeing what you think you're seeing. What's my whole point? I think that you're missing, you're really missing what's going on. There's something deeper here. That really points out how race is used, how racism is used, how, you know, how people act in this environment, you know. And since you don't really know what you really don't know any truth, you know, like I said, I was telling the person, I haven't heard you know, Colin really say anything ever that I can find. I mean, he and I'm sure he probably wants a job. But I also believe that he's taking a hard position, so he gets what he gets. My point in bringing it up was, when you take a stand at a job, to me it's almost like, well, damn, you've been exploiting me the whole time. But as soon as I get an opinion or get an idea in my head, or I take a position, there is no support. There is nobody coming to protect you. And these are things you clearly know. And don't get me wrong, people do, a person like him, or people in business, or people who were in unions before they decided to pretty much get rid of unions for the most part, you know, taking a stand, you know, in some instances, you know, did yield some benefit, at least in the short term. But you know, in the bigger scheme of things, when you take hard positions, you will typically, I think, be, you know, alone, or at least, you know, your group will get very small, put it that way. Your friendships will get small. A lot of your family most likely will probably start to create some separation and kind of put you in a category, because you're going to impact their lives and what they get access to. But anyway, I just wanted to say that real quick while we was talking about exploit. Just had my thoughts around the exploitation versus the justice, and how we can just get so occupied by either exploiting ourselves, being exploited, just the whole process of how consumerism, capitalism, the environment that kind of occupies a lot of our space is around spending and putting on fronts and trying to be something, trying to have something, and then, you know, which projects an idea of what you look like. You know, white picket fence, single family home, you know, two cars, three kids, you know, just the strivers, or striving, I should say, in a sense, for a lot of things. But anyway, I digress. Did y'all have anything on just justice? And that's what I meant, T, by the way, as far as when I was saying, when I was just thinking about justice versus exploitation, just the time and the energy that you spend either being exploited or you doing exploitation, or just how it consumes so much of you. So when you're trying to fight for justice, when you're trying to give up things for justice, you know, is that something that we, you need to have, or is that something that we should be looking at to have to give up? I put it that way. Did y'all have anything on that, or?
Yeah. Just
anything on?
Colin Kaepernick, he, in a sense, I guess maybe in the so-called white eyes, in a sense, he gave up his black card by accepting this large contract with the NFL in order to be accepted and gain another level of acceptance. And therefore, he has no dog in the fight of justice, essentially. So I think that kind of also alludes to, I think we're saying the same thing, but I was just thinking about the fact that, you know, once you are given certain access and privilege, and even speaking of access and privilege, when you're talking about if you take a certain stance within a company, it can get you fired. That also depends on your level of access or your authority or your hierarchy level within a company. But if you're an executive, you can make hard decisions all day. You're a chairman of the board, or CEO, CFO, CIO. That's what they do, by and large. So, I mean, the consequences are, the stakes are high, but so is the reward. So I think that based on that level of access and privilege, you're going to be granted a lot more leeway in terms of creative thought, and not necessarily, they talk about publicly traded company. You do have to kind of answer to the shareholders as well, but you have more leeway to do those things versus someone who's on the phone, for instance, talking to, you know, on the front line, talking to customers every day. They're expected to do A, B, C, X, Y, Z, day in and day out. Anything outside of that, I mean, for the most part, it's going to be, you'll be chastised for going against the grain is how they will consider it. And so since Kaepernick, to make the correlation, he's frontline employee, essentially, if you think about it. He's a frontline employee that everyone sees on the field. You know, people don't see that all the hundreds of staff that works behind the scenes to create these productions, whether it's the trainers, the coaches, the assistant coaches, the people that work for the TV stations and the camera crews. These are all the people behind the scenes that are moving and shaking, or even the people that are hired, like GMs or even the owners. Mm-hmm. Really, the only owner that you see on the field is who? With Dallas, right? Mm-hmm. I can't really think of any other owners that, except for maybe the guy that in Minnesota, can't think of his name. Arch, I think his name was. But you don't really see the owners on the field. And so that's to make the correlation between the corporate structure, because it is a corporation, NFL, but that's the corporate structure versus Kaepernick, who's a frontline employee. You can't go against the grain. Just can't do it. And I think he knew to a degree that, I think he kind of knew his career was in jeopardy anyway. And so I guess he figured, well, hey, because he knew when he started doing, or even, I'm sure he was thinking about it, and by the time he decided to go public with it, he already knew in his mind that he was done, he was finished. So, because out of fact, he took a trip over to Africa. I think him and his wife started some type of foundation, correct? So, he's even taken it to a further extent, because he already knew. he knew he was finished at that point. So kind of like when you're on your job and you go into the job and you're like, this is the last day that I'm going to deal with this type of foolishness. You know, or XYZ happens, I'm quitting. And, you know, you just walk off the job. You know, you made up in your mind that this is it for me.
And I'm going to tell you what makes it so powerful on one end. As much as I think it's like weird, you just made me think about one thing I will say that I think is important is, can anybody save him? Can anybody help him? Better question is anybody helping him? Can anyone make a phone call for him? You know what I'm saying? Like, when you think about power specifically, and again, we, you know, a whole lot of friends going on, and so it's interesting that in their year of 2017, as much cash as everybody's talking, black people specifically, I'm talking about, just so I'm clear, it's interesting that just on a very, and this is very surface, right, the focus is on white people, very surface, in a weird sense that nothing can be done. We're literally watching a person being treated a certain way, which is going to teach millions of people how to act. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. I know I'm not an expert, but it's a weird thing, because when you see examples like this, and it's like, well, he's disrupting something, he's impacting something that affects black people, the everyday black person, the cameraman, other athletes, instead of putting pressure on them, making it uncomfortable at ESPN and FS1, making it uncomfortable. And think about it, in this time frame, people have, let me say it this way, based off of what I've seen and heard, people have figured out ways to get around to let this happen and not kind of talk about it, you know what I mean, kind of work around it. Kind of say, you know, they'll say something like, he's rich, or, you know, he's an athlete, you know, come up with something to try to let this kind of just fade itself away, right? It's his, maybe it's his fault, or, well, he should have did it differently, or, you know, a lot of realness happens when these type of things happen, just in the business world, not to me in a real world sense, but just kind of in business, when you think about, or really in any kind of environment where you're around blacks and other non-whites and white people, where, you know, is anyone at these jobs saying, I support Cap? Not necessarily support him from an athletic perspective, but the position that he's taken, whatever that position may be. Or do you already know, just by how he's being treated in his industry, that it reinforces, watch your mouth, be careful, you know, make sure you stay straight, don't get too loose, don't get too far out there. It's just a weird, very, very weird, very, very weird thing. And I'm sure he's getting support. I'm not tracking his stuff. I'm assuming he's getting some support from some of the conscious people out here, I guess. I honestly am not researching it, so I really don't know. I don't, you know what I mean? But it's a very strange situation, because you can justify it out. Right, you can kind of say, well, you know, he's, you know, he deserved it, or you know, it's just a funny thing. But I hold right there. Go ahead, DC.
Well, the victim of racism, named Colin Kaepernick is a very, I would say he's a very unique person to study when it comes down to how the system has reacted to his necessary stand, what he deemed was necessary in his mind to do. I would imagine that Colin is very familiar with Mr. Nili Fuller, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. I think that is not very, very hard. Probably even with this particular network, Black Talk Radio, and our programs, I would imagine that he's very, very aware of the different conscious thought that's out there. And when you say, what would you give up for justice, being that he was already on the downside, not the downside, I would say, having an up and down year, He had a pretty decent year last year, good enough to remain in the league. But of course, you know, what are you willing to give up for justice? And I think that in his mind, seeing that, you know, literally there's no black ownerships, no black owners in the NFL, last I checked. So everybody that he works for in that particular field is generally white. All the people that's in management, for the most part, are white. There are a couple of general managers that happen to be black, but I would imagine even the people that's surrounding them are white people also. These corporations are almost like plantations, pretty much. Each NFL team has a very significant hold or a very significant financial standing in their respective cities. I don't care what city it is, it holds a part of that particular city. It affects everything from traffic, parking, the economy, the interest of the city, and as of the personality of the city also. Some of the teams are so connected to its community that the community actually literally owns the team, and I think the Green Bay Packers is an example of that. And what I'm trying to say is that Colin Kaepernick understood exactly what the sacrifice was that he was making, and that's what I mean by when you make an actual stand. And I respect him always for that, because he would still be in the league if he did not take that knee. There's no doubt in my mind that he would be on somebody's team. Maybe he actually may actually be a starter for one of the fringe teams in the league. He's not an actual top quarterback anymore. Well, he probably could be, but I don't think that that's his focus anymore. I think his focus is clearly on the system of racism, white supremacy. And if that is the case, how can you in good conscience, you know, do some of the things or drift your energy into some of the things that it would take to be so successful at playing football? If I'm not mistaken, playing quarterback in the NFL is not easy. It takes a lot of your time. It takes a lot of your studying. And I can imagine that probably with him doing all the other things that he was interested in, given his mental faculties to the struggle, so to speak, that may have taken away from the NFL. And I'm pretty sure that that's another reason why NFL teams are not willing to sign him, even though they know that he will make a good backup. They just don't see any reason to employ him for trying to solve the problem of racism, white supremacy, even though he can't solve it, but, you know, make a dent into trying to solve the system of racism, white supremacy that's out there. So I think it's very, very interesting to see how they have reacted to this person that's in the classification of black that has a white parent. Very interesting, by the way. That whole construct of how he still just pushed into our group, and, you know, he he actually has a white parent. So it's always very interesting when that's part of the equation.
But did you have a thought on how black people are, you know, the average black guys or black female is receiving, you know, receiving that information? It's a lot of messaging that's happening with Vic making the comments about attire and presentation. But, and people are like, yeah, that makes sense, we're going to go with that, and not really thinking about this. Colin Kaepernick was raised in, what, Utah? Or by adopted white parents, Utah, wherever the hell, Wyoming, yeah, or something. Yeah. I'm sure that he knows how to act accordingly. And I said, he made a conscious decision to be this way for whatever reason. Right. So you can't, those are not the same, it's not the same thing. But I say you got to watch out for people who have other agendas.
Well, I think he responded.
It caused a lot of confusion.
I think he responded with a tweet of the Stockholm syndrome, giving a clear definition of it as a response.
That's funny.
That's what I mean. I think that he has made a clear decision. So stay tuned. You know, things do vary in the system. So They can make things very difficult.
Well, you know what I find fascinating is that when he, like, they found him doing it. Do you remember how that happened? You know, he misbehaved, but he's a backup, right? And you notice how they just sort of found it after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that was weird?
Well, he was a starter at the time.
I thought he wasn't a starter when he started sitting. I thought he was already on the bench, and they didn't even notice him. They didn't even notice that he was doing it. They said he was doing it months before or something, right? Or many, you know, multiple games before. Or am I wrong about that?
If I'm not mistaken, I think that he was the starter. I could be incorrect. You may be right. Yeah. I don't really remember as.
As I recall, he was on the bench. He wasn't starting. We all forgot about him, and he was quietly sitting for the national anthem for multiple weeks. And when I say they, I don't even know who I'm talking about, but they so happened to notice that he was sitting after a few weeks of him doing it. It just happened. Someone just happened. I'm like, well, I don't know who these people are. I guess they happened to notice it and thought it was peculiar. But to me, it kind of reminds me of the guy from which is so weird. The guy from the Big Three League, the Ice Cube thing that he doing, Mohamed Raif.
Yeah.
Am I saying his name right? Raif.
Yeah.
Right.
His
first name is Mohamed, I think. But
yeah.
Mohamed, I think it's like I'm
formally,
sure I'm messing
formerly
up.
Known as Chris Jackson was his
right, Chris Jackson, name. CJ.
Yeah.
But CJ. He's an example of a person who changed his name. Right? He set for the national anthem, which no one even realized that, you know, he had did that back in the day, and he got punished for it. You know, it sent the message out to everybody, and they thoroughly dismissed him. And again, it's still an example of, well, and you know what's so funny? I wonder what kind of message it sends to the individual who makes the stands, because, you know, no one's gonna save you. You're on your own. You know, it's not like someone can come help you out, right? Can stop it from happening or put a phone call and say, "Yeah, we know. I understand he's not standing for it, but this is why. So just deal with it." Like no one on the planet that I know of has that kind of leverage.
Well, it's like Mr. Fuller normally says. It's like, you would get other victims to help you, but normally those other victims that are helping you are normally receiving aid themselves from somebody that's white. So it's still going to lead to that particular construct because of how they set the system up. It's just
what I mean is that what they do know, specifically talking about black people, not their own, what they got going on as far as anarchists and people who are anti democratic, etc. But as far as dealing with our group or how we've been classified anyway, just being in this particular group, we also have to behave a certain way, and it's so unusual in a sense that you really do have to behave a certain way, and you are so called a GAM. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, well, that's, you know, if I decide politically to take a stand, or if I decide that I've been mistreated, I happen to read a book, I happen to interact with someone, and they kind of give me, you know, kind of wake me up, that I get punished for it. What I was wondering about, just what you were talking about, you or T can kind of respond, but just that, is that a power issue? When if I take a position, does that expose anything, right? So if I decide to stand up or sit down or whatever, who can save me? Who can protect me? Who can say, well, you know what, you're taking a position, but you are still a participant, you're still involved, you know, so we're going to make a phone call and just make sure that you can do what you're doing and still maintain your job. That you know, I mean, sense, would it be the NCAA? Would it be the
these
groups out
for,
here can go and just no?
It exists in the public corporation sphere, but it doesn't really exist in a private enterprise sphere. But so like playing for NFL teams, they decide on who they want on their teams. It's clearly to the owner's discretion or who they deem in charge. And then even then, if the owner wants to, you know, overrule a decision made by somebody that's under them, then they can do that. That's just part of what that is. And all the owners, except for one person, I think, are white males. I do think that there is a not all of them are white. I think the one for the one for Atlanta, I think he may be Middle Eastern. I don't know if he falls into the classification. He may not. I do know that there is one white female that's also an owner of a team, but pretty much it's all white males and their families.
That's what I was saying about how crazy it is, just because it's such a real thing. Like, if you don't stand up for this flag, like, you know how people will say, like, these conspiracy people, right? Like, people who talk about what's real and what ain't real, including myself, of course.
But can I say this, though? One time, but right before you get started, the ideals, what I was saying earlier about justice, right? The ideals of this nation, Colin made a point to state that all I'm asking is for this country to live up to its creed, its constitutional laws about how to treat everybody as equal. And I don't feel like I should stand until I notice or see a significant difference in the treatment of people of color. He didn't even say black people. He just said people of color, which can mean a whole host of things. But just to say that, hey, until I see a difference or notice a difference or see that there is some kind of movement going on, then I will continue to take a stand. Not take a stand, but I will continue to kneel or sit during the actual national anthem, because it doesn't mean anything, because it's on false ears. Nobody's living up to the particular creed. Nobody's even trying to. So I just thought that was interesting when you got to the justice part also. Go ahead. Sorry about that. I just filibustered you, man. That's my bad. Go ahead.
Oh no, you threw me off. But anyway, I will say this about what you just said. I think that dealing with, I mean, the best word I can use is dealing with an empire. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's all ridiculous. You know, not of course all of me thinks that, but just a part of me, just as I'm talking out loud. And again, as people have to understand, this program is really for, well, I can speak for myself. It's for me to kind of talk things out and just kind of have discussions about different things. Not a lot more than that from my perspective. Just trying to get some ideas out there and just think through some things. But I look at this as an empire, and I mean, I'm so crystal clear on that I can kind of drop into a lot of different things and have conversations. But like what you just said to me sounds so ridiculous in one sense. Like, you know, he takes a knee, he takes a stand, he doesn't stand up for the flag, he gets punished for it. And the reason why he's doing it is to make these things called laws apply to people of color. And it's almost like, well, this is an empire. It's, you know what it reminds me of? Matter of fact, it's a great T, did you have anything before I keep running my mouth? I normally got like 15 minutes left, so I don't want to rant too much before I just go all the way out there. I'll say it real quick. It just kind of reminds me of like a pimp. You know, it kind of reminds me of, y'all ever seen, what's the sister name who used to do the Judd show? Real beautiful sister, a little bit older.
Judge Hatchett?
No. The other lady. She was before Judge Hatchett. You know, beautiful brown skin. Used to wear red lipstick. Had a short haircut, like an old school Halle Berry type haircut. I just can't catch her name right now. But anyway, she had you know, she used to get these people that, you know, it's relationship stuff, right? And she would get these people to come into her courtroom, and she would say, like, they would ask, you know, they would argue about whatever over some little money, nothing big. And, you know, then she would get into their personal lives, and she was like, well, you know how they always say, well, you knew she was a hooker or a prostitute or a stripper, or just not to obviously demean females, obviously, but just that you knew that this is who you married, and when you married her, y'all never agreed that she was going to stop doing anything. That's my whole point. And then on the reverse side, not to bash men, but on the reverse side, just how you knew he was wild. You knew he was a freak. You knew he was out of control, but you married him anyway. But now you're sitting in my courtroom complaining. And it's like, but you knew what you know what this is. Or like, you know how a pimp has women in a sense. I hate that these are terrible examples. But, you know, he has women and they're like, well, why are you treating me this way? It's like, well, I'm a pimp. Or like, you know, you can take I forget who it was, Brother Larry. Brother Larry up in New York, he was making a comment about lions and zebras and just how just the interaction and the behavior, like, you know what this is. So like, all the things you're saying doesn't mean anything. And so it's always interesting, even for myself, to watch evolution happen. Where, you know, I think DC, you had mentioned about what Martin Luther King was saying. I think in one of the things he was speaking of that we were talking about recently, but just that people are speaking like this is not an empire. It's a very unusual thing. And I know that we're constantly getting fed from movies and TV shows and from just driving around your cities and stuff that you may think it's something else, and it's kind of hard to live in that space, understanding how everything is tracked, monitored, registered, controlled, and how it's evolved to that. So maybe historically, obviously, maybe not so much. But it has the empire itself is getting stronger, has getting more has more continuity, has more experience, you know, has grown, has became more solidified, and so when you kind of take a fresh look at it, we can kind of see, like, well, okay, so what are the qualifications and definitions and rules of an empire, right? Not nothing else but that. No other words. You know, that means that there are people in charge dictating. It's an environment structured a very specific way to keep a certain amount of control, to extract, to exploit, to maintain, to manage, and to dictate, right? So if it's almost like once you get to the point where you believe that all these things are true things, everything else kind of to a degree falls to the wayside. So you can always have conversation about a lot of different things, but it's almost kind of weird. It's like, well, you know, you're under warmongers. You're under people who have been fighting wars for 1,000 years. They're still fighting wars. They have never stopped. Like, I'm looking at these people talking this morning about whatever, healthcare, whatever the hell they're talking about, and I'm just like, they're still at war. Like, it's almost like it's second nature. And then we're talking about justice. We're talking about being treated fair. You're talking about constitution. What are you talking about? Like, it doesn't even make any... not to be ranting, obviously. Sorry, not to be ranting. But just that if we've established that you're under a group of people that are warmongering monsters, right? We've established a position. To me, all other questions could be answered. So then the position is, well, you would ask, what do you do about it? You may ask, what can be done about it? What does the future look like? And what are we willing to give up for justice? What are we willing to give up to put an end to it? What are we willing? These are just ideas, obviously. These are just thoughts. You know, what are you willing to do to make this stop? And I would take a hard position, a firm position, that worrying about constitutions, worrying about rights, is foolish and irrelevant. But that's just my light opinion about it. That's just a part of me. Other parts of me think different things. But just kind of in this thought process that I'm in now, I can't. You know, the amount of sacrifice I think that's required for justice will take care of itself, right? It's going to happen. It's happening. One reason why they have to war constantly. I think one reason why they're still building, you know, aircraft carriers. The one reason why I think they're constantly trying to figure out new ways to kill and manage. It just tells you that that non-white people, specifically blacks, just to focus on us, stay focused on us, we are probably rejecting this environment constantly. So I know D had mentioned mental illness and this other stuff that I don't know about none of that stuff. Maybe not. I think that at the core of us, I think that that we are rejecting this environment. I think the struggles you're seeing is probably the rejection of the environment that they have to continuously, day in, day out, tirelessly trying to manipulate, trying to normalize. Like, it's the weirdest thing to watch a white person, especially a white person with power, tell me about democracy and fairness and treatment and, you know, getting everybody straight and making sure, you know, people have all these goods and services, but the truth of the matter is they're constantly conquering. They're constantly taking over nations and flipping them and changing them and manipulating them, all at the same time telling, this is good for you. This is good for you. Yeah, I'm going to kill some of your people because they don't know how to act. And then the rest of y'all who know how to act, it's going to be good for you. This stuff is, it's okay to live this way. Don't worry about it. We got you. You know, we're going to put this thing into place. We're going to set everything up for you. It's going to be great. Anyone who doesn't like it, we're going to have to go ahead and kill them. But it's okay, though. We're going to feed you and clothe you and do all these things. Don't worry about it. We're going to give you things to read. And we're going to have a whole wonderful structure. And we're going to be able to fly there and vacation. And it's going to be wonderful for you. But we're going to have to kill these people, though, because they don't like what we're trying to do. They don't think that we belong here. They don't think that we should monitor and control and maintain the planet. What I just said, in my opinion, when someone brings up anything about it's just so ridiculous. I just can't, my brain is killing me right now. But anybody talking about constitutions and rights and freedoms and what should or should be done, it is absolutely ridiculous. But I'll pause right there. T, did you have anything? I know we got a few minutes left here. Or D, for that matter, if you want to say anything, either of you.
I appreciate that. That was right on point. You know, something that I've, you know, when you talk about constitutional law, just law period, it's ironic to me that, and this I guess goes to support the illusion that they have to create of justice or fairness, however you want to position that. You have the codification of all these laws, yet I think even the most quote unquote non-woke person knows that these laws aren't being followed to a degree. So it's interesting that even knowing that, people still buy into it. Constitutional law, knowing that, without getting into too much substance about it, but knowing that constitutional law hasn't been followed since pretty much it was 1789 one that was ratified.
That was it.
Never been followed, and even before that. So it's just interesting the structure of the system, how create the illusion. And I was talking to Amir Paradox Tuss on this about the sorcery. You know, the fact that dealing with people, the people that run the system that have to give you a certain dichotomy, a certain illusion of how things should be. But also, it's almost like the Matrix. I said, you know, we had the first Matrix, it was too perfect. It wasn't believable. So we had to come out with 2.0, 3.0, and inject a little bit of pain into the system. You know, more cause and effect, more consequence for it. Maybe not following the rules correctly or not doing things the way that majority of people do them to make it feel real. There's something I gotta examine some more, but I just find it funny that all these laws are, I mean,
well, the question is this, T. The question is this, T. Can you negotiate with monsters? Does a zebra negotiate with a lion? Like, is there negotiation with these animals? That's all I'm trying to. That's my whole point. So to try to humanize them, to try from, and I think a lot of it's due because people watch a lot of movies and read a lot of books about how the monsters can be negotiated with, because they put that in these stories in people's brains. You can't negotiate with monsters and animals. You are what you are. I think that's a hard position, but I'll stop. My bad.
No, that's you're right on point. You can't negotiate with a monster, but they probably look at us as monsters too. So that's the ironic part about it.
Definitely. But you have a black person try to convince you that these people are somehow quote unquote civilized. That's right. Their word, right? Like, they'll convince you that, oh, we can go do this, we can go do that. It's like, what are you talking about? Based off of what evidence? Where are the facts at? Give me the data. You know that these are monsters. So how do you negotiate and maneuver around monsters?
I don't think they know that.
It's ridiculous.
I don't think they know that.
It's insanity.
It's the whole wolf in sheep's clothing thing. You know? The so-called devil, which is the archetype, and I don't believe in it, but it, you know, when he sat there and offered Jesus the world, just think about that. Now, this is this is something, I'm going to make the correlation. Now, God so-called created the devil, right? But yet he charges you with the responsibility to resist it, fight against it. So in other words, the system creates the demons and the oppression that you have to deal with, and then charges you with fighting against it, but in a benevolent type of way, they present it to you, this system, as if it's the best thing that since, you know, sliced bread.
I agree. I think what people are thinking is that, oh, we can just take it from them, or we can just borrow it for a while, right? They may leave or something, and we can just keep it for ourselves. People are delusional.
Yeah, we're all delusional. So,
agreed.
Just to varying degrees.
Agreed.
Didn't you say earlier that we wasn't mentally ill?
I sure did.
I gotta hold you to that, because that's what I mean by neurosis. It's a functional way of dealing with something that you're forced to deal with. You just make sense out of it, because you don't have any other choice unless you don't want to survive, or what you know to be survival, until something else presents itself. So there you go. Even though you know that there's something wrong, I think that there's a lot of black people that's in our classification that knows that there's something wrong, there's something going on, but obviously they feel different ways about it. Like, just like what we're saying on this program, people may strongly disagree with and think that it's foolish and it doesn't mean anything, and that it doesn't, that they just talking and da 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 da. And that's what I mean. Like, it becomes so anti that people become totally upset with each other, until we can't even see a clear view about what the system is, and what it, you can't even get to the point where we can exchange views properly because we're too busy talking bad about each other, the energy is off, and that we can't even get to the point where we're trying to solve this problem in a more constructive way. So, because we disagree with each other about how to deal with the system of racism and white supremacy.
You ever been to a I'll say that for later. I'll say that for later. I know we're getting close.
That was a good one. I was waiting for it. I could feel it.
Nah. We are at the end of the program. So we do appreciate all our listeners. Again, appreciate Black Talk Radio and Mr. Scotty Reed for the platform. Definitely go to BTR Community. Again, we're on first and third Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern every month. This is Paradox.
This is D.
And T.
Till next time, peace.